Cat's Slow Twistin', a big hit for Chubby Checker and Dee Dee Sharp 51 years ago, and most people who heard it then heard it played off a vinyl record like this one. Of course, this record was not so scratched up 51 years ago. But scratched or not, vinyl records are finding a new niche market in the age of digital downloads. Both vintage records and brand new ones are selling to people who say they prefer the sound of analog recording and get a certain pleasure from the act of playing a record on a phonograph. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll talk with two Chicago music critics and a Champagne music store owner about what vinyl records say about the way we experience music. That's coming up after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Okay, please indulge me. That is Fleetwood Mac with a hit single from their 1976 Rumours album, which I bought yesterday on vinyl for about $10, a fairly good-sounding used copy. Album cover a little dingy, which is maybe what kept the price down, plus the fact that there are so many copies of Rumours out there, as one of my guests today can tell me about. But if you like, you can get a brand new copy of Rumours on vinyl, along with new vinyl editions and not just other classic pop albums, but new records by current bands. What's been happening in the music industry? Vinyl records were supposed to have disappeared as we all turned to more convenient CDs and then digital downloads. But instead, vinyl has found a new and growing niche market fed by people who don't just like the music, but the sound, the process, maybe the feeling of playing their music from phonograph records. So on this edition of Focus, we will talk about the vinyl revival and hear from some of the people involved in it. Guests on the phone are Greg Kott, music critic for the Chicago Tribune and co-host of the radio show and podcast Sound Opinions. Welcome to the program, Greg.
Glad to be here.
Also with us on the phone, Jen Pelley, a staff writer for Pitchfork, the Chicago-based online music publication. Good morning, Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. And in the studio with me, Jeff Brandt, owner of Exile on Main Street in downtown Champaign, a record store that includes vinyl records in its inventory. And is that right, Jeff? Rumours, are there an awful lot of copy of Rumours out there?
It's among the most printed albums of all time, I would imagine.
Well, Jeff, how is the record business these days over at your store?
Increasingly good, actually. My store is actually more feasible now probably than it's ever been, thanks to the vinyl resurgence.
And, you know, I figure most people would be getting their music from big box stores or online if you look at the general population. So where does a store like Exile and Main Street fit in?
Well, surprisingly, well, not to me, I guess, but people are kind of gravitating back towards smaller record stores, largely in part because places like Best Buy and Barnes & Noble continue to shrink the amount of music that they sell. So our primary competition is probably more online sales than it is even big box stores at this point.
So if people go to Best Buy, or if they go to Walmart, is there less there now than there would have been 5-10 years ago?
Oh, yes, considerably. Before I opened my store, I worked at Borders after working other places, too. And just while I was there, they shrunk their music selection quite a bit as CD sales declined and they wanted the room for other things that sold more regularly.
And I take it that means a lot of the music market has just gone online. People are either downloading stuff, or if they're buying CDs, they're buying those online too.
Yeah, I mean, iTunes obviously has had an effect, but also a lot of bands now can self-distribute their own things. So it's not just being able to buy it directly from, record labels. A lot of bands just sell their things through their own website, and so the money goes directly to them.
Now, you've been open 8 or 9 years. When you opened, were you selling vinyl?
We didn't have very much. It was always the plan to carry more and more the longer we were open, but I just didn't have the record collection to sell at that particular point. And in 2004, there were not even close to as many records being printed, so there wasn't, as many new things that I could order back then as now.
But now, how much do you have to choose from on vinyl?
It's unbelievable. I mean, every week there's new releases that come out. Obviously, probably 80% of what we carry comes out on both CD and record at this point, of all genres, in addition to just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of reissues coming out of things that have been out of print for decades.
And if you were to look at your own sales, how much are CD and how much are vinyl?
It's probably about 60-65% vinyl at this point, and that's
most of it is vinyl.
Yeah, oh yeah, we sell more records than we do CDs at this point, and it's been a swing of just the last maybe 4 years or so, and it's the pendulum has swung quite hard the other way. It's amazing to see.
What about your own tastes? What do you prefer to listen to music on?
I mean, I prefer vinyl myself. It's very convenient for me to listen to because I'm always standing next to a turntable while I'm at work, and the turntable in my living room is you know, right next to my favorite chair to sit and listen to music. So, I mean, when I'm in the car and stuff, obviously, I can't listen to a record, but I would say almost all of the music that I listen to is on vinyl at this point.
Jen Pelley, great cut. What about you two? Are you listening to music on vinyl for other than professional reasons? Jen, if I could start with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I started collecting vinyl around 2007, which is pretty recent. But that's around the time that my interest in music was starting to become more serious. I was 18 then. And I think I listened to music on vinyl for my own interest. For professional reasons, it's usually MP3s.
Okay, if you were 18 in 2007, my calculations that you were born after the introduction of compact discs.
Yes, I was born in 1989, so I guess so.
Okay, Greg, what about you?
Yeah, I still do a lot of vinyl listening. I've never not had a turntable. I've never not, you know, played my vinyl at least several times a week. You know, there's a lot of stuff I still have that's only on vinyl. I could probably get it now digitally, but I find when I really want to listen to something that an MP3 file doesn't give me the same satisfaction that listening to you know, a great piece of music on vinyl does. So, you know, that's my go-to format if I really want to, you know, spend some serious listening time with a record. But obviously for my job, the convenience and portability of digital can't be beat. I'm not saying that's a bad format or I want it to go away, but, you know, vinyl's always going to have its charms. It's always going to have its allure for people who are hardcore into music.
What are the charms that you feel, or what do people tell you?
Well, I grew up, you know, with vinyl, you know, 45s, you know, buying 45s as a kid. That was my, you know, gateway into music. So there's definitely a nostalgia factor, but, you know, the physicality of it too is another thing. You know, holding a record in your hands, examining the cover art, looking at the graphics and the lyrics and the whole package is sort of like a little art piece. You know, I always thought of it, you know, I was collecting, I couldn't afford a painting, but this is my way of collecting a little art that I could, you know, put on my shelf and talk to my friends about. And I have very fond memories of you know, having listening parties with friends. We would put, you know, we would sit, you know, for 3 or 4 hours in a room and play records for each other and turn each other on to new music that we were listening to. So, you know, those kind of things are still, you know, ingrained in my DNA. And, you know, I keep going back to those kind of experiences because, you know, there is a sound quality that a vinyl album has that can't be replicated by digital. There's two different formats, digital and analog, and analog does have a different sound quality to it. I'm sure there's technical experts that can explain it better than I can, but to me there's a warmth there that digital can't reproduce. And I think there's another factor too. I think there's a shininess to those MP3 files. It's amazing. In the 80s we went in through this period where we wanted to get music as clean sounding as possible. And now I think we're sort of seeing a return to, like, well, you know, I don't mind if it's a little dirty sounding. I don't mind if it's a little bit, you know, imperfect. And I think there's a certain amount of allure and to that because I think it feels more human to people. And, you know, I guess it connects back to that humanity for me. It's that's, you know, being in a record store, talking to people about music, buying a record, having your hands on it. There's something about community and people, you know, feeling human about that is very appealing to me.
Well, you know, want to see if some other people feel that way, and we have some audio lined up that our producer Lindsay Moon collected on a Record Store Day. Record Store Day was was a couple of Saturdays ago, I think, in April. And this is a pretty big event for independent stores like yours, I take it, Jeff.
Oh, yes. It's been our best day ever, increasing the last 4 years. It's pretty overwhelming, the support that we've had.
Well, Lindsay Moon says she talked with teenagers over at a few record stores who were there to check things out because their friends were, to college students who are avid vinyl collectors, and older people who grew up with vinyl. Most said they liked vinyl for the nostalgia or because they liked its sound. Alan Gibb, age 23, was visiting friends in Champaign. He says he feels very strongly that music consumers should buy CDs or records instead of downloading or streaming.
I could go on for this for a while. I think this whole digital music thing has ruined the art of the album. And what I mean by that is, I used to buy, and still do, I buy like whole albums at a time. And I never liked the whole thing at first. But, if I give it its due time and listen to it for a long time, then I grow to like it. And I feel that, like, these days with, buying music online, people are more tempted to just buy, like, single songs and things like that that sound good at first. And they never really, I think that there's this, like, wonderful art of, like, creating a whole album that people have been missing out on more and more.
Meanwhile, Charles Davis from Champaign was also shopping for new music. He's a little older than Alan. He's in his 50s. He has a collection of more than 400 vinyl albums, and he says he likes it because he grew up with it. It's familiar, it sounds better, and that he supports the vinyl resurgence because he really wants locally owned record stores to survive.
Well, I love the idea of maintaining an independent record store here and throughout the country, and I like that there is an increased variety and just a chance to find things you never see elsewhere.
And this is the time where we can ask all of you to join the conversation as well. If you listen to music on vinyl or collect it or sell it or record music for vinyl or just remember what vinyl was like when it was the dominant recording format, give us a call at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And Jen Pelley, I wanted to ask you, since you essentially grew up in the post-vinyl age, what the landscape is for what most people get their music from these days, which I take it is downloads.
It's definitely not for, in terms of being interested in vinyl, it's definitely for me not a nostalgia thing because, as you said, I didn't grow up with records. I grew up with digital. But I think that growing up with downloading music, primarily not even really buying CDs that much, I think digital culture just starts to kind of numb you a little bit, and you want to go back to, as Greg said, that like something that feels a little more human, and that feels more like an art object that you're collecting rather than just files out there in the abyss of the internet. I think the art is definitely a huge reason that people my age go back to vinyl.
Not enough of that on a CD jewel box, you think?
I don't think so. I was actually thinking about it yesterday, and I have several like vinyl LPs framed and hung around my bedroom, and I can't see myself doing that with the CD. I'm not sure why. But
those little booklets, I guess, could have a certain allure, but I don't know if people designed for those the same way they designed for those 12-inch square album covers. Greg, do you think just that the aesthetics of vinyl is... And the aesthetics of album design is a big part of it then?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think of the whole process. People get fetishize this a little bit much sometimes. But you think about it. There's this thing spinning around that you can watch, and then there's this needle that plunges into the groove, and it's there's a sound made when that happens, and then there's the snap, crackle, pop, and it's just very strange and different from what, with digital there is no sound other than here comes the music, and it's it almost seems like it's being transmitted from an alien planet. And with the vinyl, it's very much in front of you. You're a participant in the music being made almost, because And then you have to get up every 20 minutes to change the side over, you know, or in the case of a 45, every 3 minutes. You're very involved with it, and it does sort of consume your attention. It's not background music. It pretty much, you know, is the center of what you're doing at that moment. And, you know, I've done several stories on this. When vinyl started coming back, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you know, it was being fueled by not only old codgers like me, but who were always into vinyl, but young folks, you know, people of Jen's generation. And, you know, there was a certain amount of longing there for something that was a little bit more hands-on than the digital thing that was going on. I do think that there was a sense of, you're kind of alone with those MP3 files, and you're in your room downloading files. There's no sense of participating in it, you know, the way a vinyl experience can be. And again, I sound like I'm romanticizing it too, but I actually talked to a bunch of people in their 20s and teens who were getting together with their friends to have listening parties with vinyl, you know, mainly because only one of them might have a turntable. They all had vinyl albums, but none of them could afford a turntable except one of them. So they'd go over to that person's house or dorm room and listen to records. And, you know, I think they enjoyed that experience. I think that was just a very satisfying way to listen to music together and talk about the music and really get into it from all aspects. And, you know, again, it's about community. It's about the human experience, about interacting with other people. You're interacting with a record. You're interacting with people. You know, music at the center of that. That's a pretty idyllic picture.
What are, you know, since people are buying vinyl, what sort of machines are they playing them on these days? When I see a turntable, I'm likely to see what looks to be a pretty much manually operated single-play turntable that has, for instance, the record changer survived this transition, or is it considered not the way to go?
The record changer, yeah, has pretty much gone the way of the dinosaur. Most of them are just, you know, flip the record after you're done. You don't see any manufactured anymore that drop, you know, the second side onto the top of the turntable. But we carry both new and used record players at my store. The new ones are nice. They're cheap and pretty easy to afford for kids that are getting into turntables. I myself prefer some of the older ones, but that's just a personal preference. But they're not all so expensive that, as you would think.
And I'm wondering, Greg, what are you playing your music on when you're playing vinyl at this point?
Yeah, it's I've got a decent turntable. You know, gotta have a decent stylus on there. You know, I'd have to wander over there and look at all the precise technology that I have, because frankly, I'm not as interested in that. I usually go over to a reputable store and ask the guy who knows something about this stuff to help me buy one that you know is going to give me good quality sound. And and it's a single play. I never had one of the ones where you stack the records and it'll just drop them. You know, even back in the day, people told you that's bad for your records. You know, don't do that.
But it was such a charming looking piece of machinery, as I remember of record chambers.
And this is coming from a guy whose first phonograph was one of those things that you open up like a little suitcase. You know, and you could sit on the floor, and it's probably worth about $50. And scratched up a lot of records with cheap needles and stuff like that, cheap styluses. But, you know, now I recognize the value of these things. In some ways, I regret not taking better care of some of my records back in the day. But now they're like, you know, these are like precious offerings. You don't want to screw these things up. You know, who knows if you're going to get another copy of this on vinyl, you know. So there's more of an attitude of that, is that this is valuable stuff, and it should be treated that way. And, you know, I think the big issue always why CDs were so initially popular and, you know, and for that matter cassettes, was that, you know, people are always saying that vinyl's going to, you know, oh, it sounds horrible, you know. You play it a bunch of times and it's going to wear down and it's going to sound like garbage. And, you know, CDs will be forever. They'll never sound not great. And, you know, it's weird, but, you know, you find out, well, a lot of that was just a bunch of, you know, that was the industry talking to us and talking us into buying some new technology that, you know, maybe we bought for the wrong reasons. Oh, this is going to last forever, therefore it's perfect. Well, maybe we didn't want perfection, you know. Maybe we just need to take better care of our records, you know.
I do have to say from my own memories, growing up with phonographs, that there were definite downsides. Records, when they get dirty, are hard to clean simply because they have a groove and that's where all the dirt goes. Cheap cartridges often have trouble staying on track if a sharp sound comes, so you have a skipping factor even if the record itself is not damaged. Records warped, records get dirt on them, and clearing off the dirt means you're risking damaging the vinyl surface itself just to get the dirt off. Turntables wow and flutter and rumble. All of these things happen unless you're on the high end of the equipment scale, and that's what the technology was, say, in the 1960s. So that's the downside from someone's memories. This doesn't seem to be bothering those people who can choose vinyl now, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, the turntables that they make today, they're pretty low maintenance. They don't really need a lot of upkeep. Obviously, the stylus that's on there is not going to be the best if you have one that's, you know, you buy for $100-$150. But you can always upgrade and put a better needle on the turntable and upgrade it that way. There's also some fairly inexpensive ways to clean records. Obviously, if they get scratched, that's the worst part of it. But there's a couple of things that you could buy now to clean records that are pretty easy to use. And if there's just surface dirt and stuff in the grooves, you can clean them up, and they sound pretty good.
Jen Pelle, you were about to say something there as far as about records and just how the whole thing works mechanically.
Yeah, I feel like since records kind of vinyl feels special or something, I just take better care of it. Like growing up with CDs, I feel like they could start to feel a little disposable because especially constantly burning them yourself, you realize how easy they are to make, whereas vinyl you definitely can't make on your own. And I just feel like there's this inclination to take way better care of vinyl records than I ever felt with CDs.
Yeah, making records is a little more complicated. I remember seeing ads in the pre-tape era for home disc cutting machines, and I've seen the products of those. That's not the same thing as burning a CD, of course, and those particular records didn't last very long, but that was the technology that was available at the time. Cindy in Champaign sent us an email that she still has some of her dad's 78 RPM records, although she had them digitized years ago, and remembers being fascinated as a kid that there was only one song per side, although I guess a 12-inch single might give you the same sort of impression. Greg, Jen, do you come across any people, I mean younger people listening to music today who are into vinyl, who have any curiosity about the even older technologies of recording?
I remember the first time I saw a 78 record was at the college radio station that I worked at, WNYU at New York University for a few years, and we had gone deep in the archives and found all these 78s, and I remember thinking, I've never even heard of this before, and that was only a few years ago. So I think that for most people, that technology is pretty in the past.
Greg, how is it for you? Do you hear anything about interest in that sort of technology?
Yeah, I haven't. To be honest with you, I don't know of a lot of. I have not run across a lot of younger folks into 78s or even 45s, for that matter. There's always been a big cassette sort of cult out there, and I don't think that ever went away. It that seems to never fade. I even ran across a bunch of people that were into 8-tracks, people who are not of that generation who started collecting those. And a band, Cheap Trick, from the Midwest, actually put out their last CD, their last record, whatever you want to call it, on 8-track. Because there were certain people out there who were asking for it.
They found somebody to manufacture 8-tracks.
That's a very good question. I have no idea. I think they must have, that in itself would probably be a good story to do, to find out where you could get an 8-track even made these days. Who would want to make that? I mean, you know, there's only two major vinyl pressing plants left in the U.S. I happened to visit one of them last summer in Nashville, and they're basically saying they could go 24/7 manufacturing vinyl because the demand has just skyrocketed to that point. But it's you know, it's vinyl albums. And I think to speak to your point about the quality, you know, you can still, you know, there are cheap turntables out there. You still see them at flea markets. I know a lot of kids who have bought them there. That's they can't afford a $500 turntable, so they get one for $50 at a garage sale. But the vinyl itself, the quality of the vinyl that I'm seeing being made now, is eons better than some of the stuff that you used to get in the 80s, where it was kind of flimsy. Jeff could probably speak to this better than I could, but the whole notion of this 180-gram vinyl, and one of the things is that they used to make this stuff, some of it out of recycled plastic, so the quality was kind of flimsy. Now, you're talking about some serious plate action here. You know, there are some serious heft behind these things. They almost seem unbreakable, like they could be used as a weapon. You could, you know, hurt somebody throwing an 180-gram piece of vinyl at them. And there's just a stature and a strength to them and a quality to the workmanship that wasn't necessarily always there in the waning days of vinyl in the 80s and early 90s. So it seems from that standpoint that the quality, there's been some quality control about it. And when people do play these new vinyl albums on a decent turntable, the sound quality is going to blow you away. And at least that's been my experience with some of the stuff that's been reissued on vinyl.
I want to go ahead and take a caller, and Steve from Watsika is with us on line one. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call, enjoying the conversation. I'm in my mid-50s, and I can remember going to college in the 70s, and boy, they had speakers that could basically fill a dorm room, and that was a major standard field issue there. But I also remember the entire industry, the top 40 radio stations out of Chicago, and the importance of a band getting their record played, and everything that came with that, Payola scandals and the rest of it, and also going down to local Sears and buying 45s for a dollar, and comparing your 45s to your friends. And, of course, the major role that American Bandstand played back in the day in the industry. And, of course, you talk to younger people today, and they don't even know what you're talking about. So, anyway, just a few thoughts, enjoying the conversation and the nostalgia of an industry that's gone away, but perhaps is making a little bit of a comeback. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Steve. And that makes me think about, when I think of the days when records were dominant, it was a media landscape in which the choices were limited, and I think most of the traffic was one way. It was the business presenting its wares to the public, and perhaps more difficult for people who were just listeners or fans or dedicated amateurs to get in on the technology themselves. And maybe that's also affected how people look at music in general, whether it's vinyl or anything else.
The rise of the CD, really had an effect, obviously, on sales of vinyl, but the record industry definitely kind of forced it down everybody's throat. The DJs kind of kept the kept the vinyl industry afloat for a long time, and even though the industry wanted to stop making vinyl, they kind of were forced to keep it up for a little bit.
And that brings up the question of the business aspect of why vinyl is making a resurgence right now. I think I'd like to get to that after the break. We'll be back in a moment to talk more about the vinyl resurgence on Focus on WYLL. We're back on Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows, talking about listening to music on vinyl, on phonograph records. My guests are Jeff Brandt, the owner of Exile on Main Street in downtown Champaign, Jen Pelly, a staff writer at Pitchfork Media, and Greg Kott, music critic for the Chicago Tribune and host of the public radio show and podcast Sound Opinions. And a couple of emails that come in, one from Michael, who writes, "Records suck. I remember static scratches, wow and flutter, distortion from feedback. It's like he was reading my mind. Changing needles, cleaning records, endless aggravation. On the other hand, Brian says he's been collecting vinyl passionately for 15 years, longtime supporter of Exile on Main Street, which he is really proud to call his local record shop. One aspect of vinyl versus MP3 that you haven't discussed, Brian writes, is what many refer to as the autobiographical aspect. A record collection tells a person's life story. Downloads can't do that. Those are those of us that really collect vinyl love the fact that nearly every purchase we make has a story behind it. We remember the faraway record store where we got one record. We associate the people who gave us a record as a gift with the record itself. We brag about how hard we had to search to find a copy of an album we really wanted. Downloading isn't just a solitary problem. There's nothing exciting or memorable about finding an MP3, but I could tell you a story about nearly every one of my 4,500 records. The thrill of the chase. Jen, is there any of that for you?
I think there is that, too. I mean, I feel like I still don't proactively collect records because it can get really expensive, but I also have a lot of cassette tapes that I've collected over the past 5 years, and when I look at that collection, there's definitely a really often interesting story behind one of those, especially tapes that come out from new bands. I definitely agree with that.
Greg Cott, I'm wondering, there's something then just about the attachment we have to physical objects and downloads. CDs maybe, but downloads not physical objects as such, and if we can't see them, we can't put the same attachment to them.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, I did a book a few years ago about, the first 10 years of the transition into digital and how it changed the relationship that people have with the music that they listen to. And, I interviewed, hundreds of people, young people, who basically were introduced to music through digital music files. So around the time of Napster, the introduction of Napster, they would have been 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, first year in college. And they were accessing lots of music through files, digital files. And they even said, it was exciting at first, and then it became like you're turning on water, and there's just this endless supply of music. It'll never run out. You can always replenish it. You can always get more where that came from. And so, they're maxing out their whatever devices they have to listen to the music on. And then after 6 months, they get bored with that. So 10,000 songs go out the window and 10,000 new ones come in because it's that easy. And, there really wasn't sort of a personal attachment to any of that stuff because, hey, I can always get more of this. I remember wondering what the band Neu sounded like, a German art rock band from the early 70s. I had impossible to find any recordings. This would have been in the 80s sometime. And, just going on this all-point search, every record store I ever went to, I asked, and searched for Neu. And when I finally ended up finding an import copy, which I paid exorbitant amounts of money for just because I had to have it, it was everything I hoped it would be and more, that experience will never leave. I still have that record, And I'm not sure the attachment would have been the same if I could have said, I wonder what Neu sounds like. Now I can click a mouse, and within 2 seconds I can have that that urge satisfied. And believe me, I'm not complaining about that. I think that is an awesome, awesome tool to have at your disposal. But it does alter your attachment to that piece of music. There's no doubt about it.
I wanted to ask, and maybe Greg or maybe Jeff can talk about this, as to what happened in the music business to bring vinyl into this resurgence. What I've read is saying that the sales numbers started going up in 2007, which I believe is the same year that Record Store Day started. Was there a difference at that point, the way records were marketed, that way that vinyl was marketed, that made a difference?
I just think part of it is the fact that they've just started manufacturing a lot more of them, and there's a lot more things readily available. The interest has kind of grown hand in hand with the fact that the record industries love making money, and people don't buy as much music in the same ways that they used to, so they scrambled to find other ways to make money. Largely in part, though, vinyl came back because a lot of the indie labels were continuing to make records and really supporting vinyl in independent record stores. And as people gravitated away from some of the big box places, they started seeing vinyl out there more and more. Kids started discovering that vinyl was different in lots of different ways than MP3s and CDs. And so I think that's part of why the industry has grown back towards vinyl.
For you as a retailer, what's just for the standard prices for new product, what's the price today of a CD and the price today of a vinyl LP of the same album?
Both CDs and LPs, it's still kind of the Wild West in terms of the price range. The record industry has really lowered the value of hundreds and thousands of record CDs that used to sell at, you know, maybe $14, $15, $16.99, and now they actually retail for like $5 and $6.99. Probably the standard price is anywhere from $10.99 to maybe $15.99 for CDs. With vinyl, a lot of the indie labels are able to manufacture, and this is interesting, They manufacture vinyl and sell it pretty cheaply, like, you know, $14, $15.99, where a lot of the major label stuff seems pretty overpriced, maybe even price gouging. And that, I don't set the prices. I just, you know, have to enforce them, as it were. But the price ranges for a new, like, 12-inch full-length album range from about $10 to maybe even $35 or $40.
Do wholesalers treat that ship CDs and vinyl to you, treat those products differently as far as what you're able to do with them?
Yeah, the industry standard for a very, very long time has been that vinyl is non-returnable. So I get stuck with any record that I overorder or that I can't sell to people. So that's you know, it's not good, but the industry's always had that standard for a long time, so they're not going to go back and start taking records back. They do take CDs back in returns. So that's nice, but with my business primarily becoming vinyl, it'd be nice if they started taking back some of the records, since that's...
So vinyl, even if it's, you know, still within the plastic, they won't take it back?
Not unless it's defective, no, they won't.
Okay, any particular reason why they treat the two products differently?
I mean, honestly, vinyl's like the perfect format for them, because they can sell it, and then it's out of their warehouses, and they never have to think about it again. CDs... I'm sure a lot of the reason that some of the prices have dropped on some of these things is because they have thousands and thousands of copies of things that have been manufactured that they're not going to be able to get rid of because of digital downloading.
Greg or Jen, could either of you shed any light as what the marketing history is here with vinyl as to how it's being sold now compared to when it was dominant?
Well, I think Jeff nailed it on the head. I think it started with indie labels. I think it was just a cool little artifact, you know, that they like to have. I do think that some of the bands specifically wanted a vinyl version of whatever album that they were making. You know, I remember a band like Wilco was very into vinyl. You know, they were all music collectors, fans of the format, fans of music, period. And during the time when nobody was really making vinyl anymore or selling it, when they were on Nonesuch, for example, I think with the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot album, I remember for sure this would have been around 2001, 2002. You know, they made a few... at least a few hundred vinyl copies of that record, or had Nonesuch make them, which, you know, would have probably been an expensive proposition back then. But I think the hardcore music collectors, and maybe the ones who had a little bit of clout, were the ones who kept the art form alive. And you know, now I talk to bands where they say that vinyl, and these are usually indie bands, small indie bands, that say that, you know, they insist on getting some vinyl of each release that they make, because, you know, that they're able to sell it on the road at their merch table. And a number of them have told me that the sales of those vinyl albums, of their albums at these merch tables on the road, usually make them enough money to get to the next town. In other words, it's financing their tour, and it's a valuable revenue stream for them on a very kind of small, you know, hand-to-hand basis, but it's a valuable ally. So, you know, there's, you know, among the people who value this sort of thing, there's certainly a commercial value there, but I also think it's being driven by the hardcore music collectors and fans, and those were found on those indie labels, running those indie labels. You know, people like, you know, folks like at Matador and Thrill Jockey and these small labels with a sort of a connoisseur's type of approach to music, and a lot of the bands that were on them. And I think that, in turn, you know, was went hand in hand with what was going on in the internet with the indie community, you know, with sites like Pitchfork that were speaking to a fan base that was interested in these sort of bands and in these sort of recordings. And I think those two things went hand in hand. You know, the hardcore music fans found each other, and vinyl became you know, the coin of the realm again, at least among the most committed fans.
We are talking about the vinyl resurgence here on Focus, the strengthening sales, and I understand they've gone up rather sharply just in the past year of vinyl records in comparison to CDs or downloads here on Focus. My guests are Greg Kott of the Chicago Tribune and the radio show Sound Opinions, Jen Pelley of Pitchfork Media, and Jeff Brandt, owner of Exile on Main Street. And we welcome your calls at 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And actually, Kevin in Urbana just sent us an email with a practical question, which I guess is for Jeff. Where do you get your older turntables repaired?
Actually, there's several places you can in town. There's a place not too far from my store called Analog Outfitters, and they've repaired some turntables for us in the past. And also Glenn Poor's Audio Video in Urbana, not the one in Champaign, but the older location that's, I believe it's on Main Street in Urbana. They've also repaired stuff for us in the past, and they have lots and lots of old parts for lots of old turntables there.
Okay. I wanted to bring up another aspect of the uses of vinyl, and one which I guess never actually went away, and that's crystallized in this music track right here. If we have it ready, give it a play.
I'm the man.
I'm the man.
And you know that.
And I'm just fading out there, but that is DJ Craze, a DJ from Nicaragua. Turntablism, which I guess is the more recent term for DJs who manipulate sounds on a turntable, which is not something you can do maybe with open reels if you have the right finesse for it, but certainly not with a CD. And I'm wondering what impact that has had on just the existence of vinyl in a digital age. Greg or Jen, if either of you want to chime in here.
Well, I do believe that there's absolutely a factor in that. Turntablism has been around forever, since basically the start of hip-hop, you know, late 70s. But, you know, people like DJ Kubert turned it into an art form. You watch this guy, and it's an amazing thing. But I think hand-in-hand with that is the way DJs playing on, you know, with turntables is perceived as a really cool thing, as opposed to just pressing buttons, you know, and manipulating a computer. You see it in commercials, TV commercials. You see it in movies. You see it in these visual images, you know, associated with products, which, you know, Let's forget about the connection with commercialism and focus on the fact that it's being presented as something cool. And that's talking to a generation that's like identifying, like, wow, that's different, that looks great, that has a cool factor that, you know, somebody pushing an Apple, you know, pushing a button on a computer doesn't have. So I think there's definitely a factor there where that's, you know, opened up some doors for vinyl that wouldn't have been there, because whereas, you know, say in 1998 or 2002, you know, a vinyl album was looked at as anachronistic, you know, a has-been, a sort of a relic of a previous generation, and now it's being presented to young people as the cutting edge of cool. So I think it's done a 180 in terms of its perception among a new generation of listeners.
I know one thing that strikes me about turntablism is that The inventors of the phonograph did not have this in mind at all. This is not something that Thomas Edison and Emil Berliner were thinking of 130 years ago as to what these machines would be used for, and yet that's one way they're being used. Jeff Brandt, I'm wondering, do people who use turntables for that effect, is that any part of your business, or is that a separate stream as far as people who buy records and turntables?
Oh, no, we get a lot of DJs in the store that... if you're a DJ, one of your favorite things to do is to dig through records, you know, things that are out of order. It doesn't really matter. You'll literally go through an entire store. You'll spend hours there digging and digging to find the one thing that you've never heard or that seems so strange that it may be a great sample. We've had a number of DJs over the years DJ in the store. We have a couple of Techniques 1200s in the shop that get a workout pretty regularly. And it's fun I love watching DJs spin records because it is unique. It's really unlike anything else. And it's fun to watch people's reactions to it, too, because it is so different. And sometimes, like when we have the DJs outside, we'll have people literally just stop and standing and watch the DJs of all age groups.
Let me go ahead and take a call on line 4. Derek in Urbana, you're on the air on Focus.
Thanks for talking to me. As a musician, I just wanted to make a point. Something that's really starting to bother me more and more is as I have a bigger and bigger digital library, it never says who's playing on most of these records. So to me, it does matter who's playing guitar, who's playing bass, who the backup band is, if it's a solo artist. And that's the giant failing, I feel like, with the digital downloads. I mean, half the time it takes me a while just to search the internet just to figure it out because it's not readily available like it is on vinyl.
Okay, thank you very much. And that's something is there's just a lot of room for a lot of information on vinyl records that isn't going to come down on a download unless you can find the website that comes along with it. Is that part of the charm for you, Jen?
To have the information that comes with the record itself?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I'm definitely one of those people that Greg was referencing earlier that grew up learning about music just by downloading these files that you might not really know that much about. And when you get a record and it has that context in it, there's just like, I feel like there's nothing digitally that's really been able to replicate that yet. There are some records that I've bought over the past few years where a band will reissue its entire discography in, say, a 3-LP set, and the sorts of things they can put together are really impressive with photos and context about a band's history and stuff, and that's something I really appreciate.
Okay, I'm just reminded by my producer that I can't let a show on vinyl go by on this station without making a mention of our own annual vintage vinyl sale here at WYLL. We're not the only public radio station that does this, but I think we're one of the ones that has kept on doing it. The vintage vinyl sale funds actually WILL's Illinois Radio Reader, which provides reading services through the blind over our subcarrier FM frequency. And the vintage vinyl sale will take place this Saturday, May 4th, in downtown Champaign at 40 East University Avenue. That's just east of Seven Saints Restaurant. It's across the street from the Illinois Terminal. You'll find more information on our website at will.illinois.edu, or you could call Dean Geiken at the Illinois Radio Reader at 217-333-6503. Come early to the vintage vinyl sale before all the really rabid collectors get the good stuff, because there's always a lot to choose from. My technical director, Jason Croft, is shaking his head. Yes, the good stuff goes early if you're not careful. I'm wondering, and Jen, perhaps I'd like to start with you on this. How long do you think this resurgence will last? Do you think an interest in vinyl will remain? Do you think your kids will be interested in this sort of thing?
I hope so. I mean, I think that when I started to get into vinyl in 2007, I don't think it didn't really cross my mind that it had really gone anywhere, because it just made sense to me. It seemed like natural that if you're really interested in music and you're serious about it, that having it on vinyl is the best way to have it. And I think that passing vinyl, like for example, passing vinyl on to your kids or something, definitely feels more meaningful than, you know, like giving them a flash drive with some MP3s on it. And I think that if you compare the amount of time that vinyl was away to the amount of time that vinyl was around, it might seem like kind of vinyl falling to the background was kind of the thing that is going away, you know?
Okay. Greg Kahn, I'm wondering, do you see a long future for vinyl, or is this something that's going to evolve again?
You know, I'm terrible at predicting things. Otherwise, I'd be a far wealthier man than I am. But, you know, I think the one thing that I would caution against is anybody, every time a new technology comes along, doesn't necessarily mean that it completely eliminates the value or worth of all that came before it. You know, I think there's room for all of these technologies to play together. So as MP3s, you know, the digital technology increases and the sound quality improves, doesn't mean that that's all that people will ever want. I think there's always going to be room for these artifacts and physical objects, art objects in our lives. You know, it's not going to be a huge market, but I think it's always the same thing. You know, with books, you know, everybody's reading on their portable reading devices, but I still think that people are going to want books 100 years from now. At least I hope so. And I think the same will be true of some sort of physical representation of the music. And right now it seems like vinyl is perfectly positioned to be that.
Okay, well, I thank you very much, Greg. We're just going to have to cut it off there. It's been a fascinating hour with Greg Kahn and Jen Pelly of the Chicago Tribune and Pitchfork Media, and Jeff Brandt, who sells vinyl at Exile and Main Street in downtown Champaign. This is Focus on WILL.